Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. Before we dive in with our incredible guests, I do want to remind you, please, if you are listening and you like this podcast, subscribe, comment, like, and what?
I hit the notification bell.
Yes, because it really helps with the podcast. It helps get the word out. We super appreciate it. And without further ado, so formal, we have the Gibsons here. Woo! We're excited
Thanks
to be
for
here.
Having us. What an honor.
Thanks for coming back. I mean, it was so much fun. Jonathan was like, we should have Brian and Jesse on. This is the lovely couple. So yeah, that's great.
What started that whole conversation was we got to have lunch after. Mm-hmm. And I loved having your wife with us and getting her perspective on things. And then we found out that you guys actually wrote a book together.
Oh, yeah.
Together, called Love Handles.
The greatest title I've ever heard.
That alone is the best marriage title book I've ever heard.
In that moment, I was like, these are my people. I was like, it just solidified it for me. I was like, that's incredible. Who came up with that name?
It was actually a friend of ours. He's been a friend of ours for years and years. Brian's probably going to try to take credit, but he didn't.
I'm sure it was me. We fought about who named our church like 20 years ago, and nobody has a consensus.
We both think we really named it.
Everybody wants all the glory, right?
What's the name of the church?
But speaking of, what is the name of the church?
Well, that one was a different name, but we compiled it together. We're his church now. It's the name of his church. Because multiple churches, like the one that sent us, we went back and took it. We planted other locations, and now it's all one church. His church. Back in the day, we were River City Church.
Yeah, and we do know who named his church because he said, if I could name it, I would just name it Church, but you can't find it on the internet. I'm like, you can't name something Church.
It is what it is. It's a church.
I'm going to name it Dog. And if we get a cat, I'm going to name it Cat. Yeah. So why can't we just name the church Church? I'm like, because they cannot find it. It needs an identifying factor.
So it does.
He said, okay, well, just, I don't know, just, I wish it could just be called His Church, and we don't have to worry about it, so that's the reason that we named it His Church.
I actually like that, though.
Yeah. It's very Texan of you, because wasn't John Wayne, he named his dog Dog.
Dog, yeah. You've seen the movie. You know where I'm coming from. Yeah, name it Dog. Well, I think the church is Jesus's church, right? And if it's his deal, it's his bill. Mm-hmm. Give him all the glory. He's in charge. Name it His Church. It takes the weight off of us, and it's where it should be, at the throne room.
So what made you guys want to write a marriage book?
Love Handles. Jess, tell them what you think.
I think that what made us want to write a marriage book is just having to be married for 25 years. You know, it was like we married each other and we liked each other. We were friends. And I think it was just kind of at times discouraging to us that it would seem so impossible or so overwhelming. And we really wanted to stay friends, raise kids that wanted to come back home when they left because it was fun and great to be there and it was healthy, you know? Not like they had to or they just ran away, but that was our goal. We started having kids. We started planning churches. Things got super stressful. When we would look for things to do, it was like either super sappy and like he could not digest it and it was just too much for his cowboy brain to handle. He's like, I can't talk about my feelings this long. Like, I don't know what we're doing.
I love that.
And I came from a counseling background in education. So for me, I'm like, we need to talk about, like, you know, we need to discuss things. And so the way we learned to manage, we found was kind of helpful with people in our church and that we would do these series and people would come and it would be the largest attended series of the year, the largest downloaded series of the year. And we thought, we've got to help people because if it seems too big to wrap your brain around, they just get overwhelmed and there's no hope. And so we wanted to write a book that was super simple and that had a practical application at the end of each chapter that you could, like, if you're sitting at your kid's soccer game, you could read the chapter together in 10 minutes. And then that week when you go on a date, like, try to put the little, you know, love handle is what we called the kind of homework at the end. And it was just a super simple one-step thing where they would build a family culture for themselves. But it was easy, and we wanted like a 25-year-old soccer mom and dad to be able to do it in their crazy week with no sleep. And so that was kind of where we were coming
perfect,
from.
Honestly.
I don't read it. That's what I keep thinking.
I know. I wish you brought a book so we could have one.
I should have actually brought a copy.
I'll get one on Amazon. Make a note for me.
Talking about it, I should have brought it.
It was great.
Yeah, love handles. The whole idea is how to hold on to the love of your life. And so I think about God taking the rib out of Adam. right out of Adam's side creating Eve. So who knows? Maybe the rib was low somewhere down around the fat on my back or my side, and that's where the rib came out of, and that's where the most important thing Adam has. Mm. It's going to be created. So that idea of love handle, that's and good. So then there are different love handles, what to hold on to, right? Hold on to your family unit, right? Hold on to your love life. Hold on to your communication. These ideas. And I found this about marriage. Like, I wasn't in an environment where you were ever taught about marriage. You know, that was kind of quiet, taboo. Mom and dad were married, mm-hmm. but we didn't talk about their problems. All that was behind closed doors. In the family I grew up in, you really didn't talk about sex, except don't be having it or don't be getting anybody pregnant, right? These are the conversations
we had. I feel
like
a lot of people did that. Yeah.
That was kind of the vibe. Yeah. Now, I'm getting ready to turn 48. So, you know, we're going back 70s, 80s. I was mm-hmm. born 77, raised in the 80s. And then I got saved. We got spirit-filled. We got married in 2000. I started looking at marriage resources, and it felt like a lot of them were all from a female perspective on how to housebreak a man. Sometimes it felt like how to emasculate a man.
Yeah.
Right? So I didn't feel like there was a good balance of both male and female leadership. I'm a pro female. I'm married to a female preacher, got two daughters, hope they're president of the United States because I want to fly on Air Force One.
Sure.
I'm all for the girls.
Nobody's getting abused in this household.
Nobody's getting abused. Everybody's standing in their ground, right? But there needs to be a return to biblical masculinity, manhood, being a father and being a husband. And those voices need to come forth clear and not through this, beige kind of churchianity, weak male leadership pattern, mm-hmm. right? So that was a big part for us too, both the male and the female perspective.
I think from
teach like that
from
too.
Somewhere healthy, you know, because we really did like each other, and yet we still had marriage struggles, you know, and we had to work
those out.
Everybody does, and we were learning, but it took us a lot longer sometimes to process and learn because we couldn't find it. It was like a voice. I was like, well, I don't feel mistreated. I'm just mm-hmm. married, and for him, you know, it wasn't this severe trauma, but real life parents that are just trying to get through raising their kids every day and have a marriage. And so for us, there was something about both voices getting to be heard and both voices being healthy and strong, not one being lesser than the other.
But it's like working together. It's like coming into alignment and being on the same team.
That's
absolutely.
The word, same team.
Same team.
If you see yourself on the same team, your marriage works. If you see yourself as opponents, if we're lining up for battle, I'm offense, you're defense.
Right.
Oof. You can't make a marriage work.
We just look at each other and we say, strength and honor. And we know that's code for we're on the same team. It's from Gladiator.
Yeah.
But I want to ask a question, but I want to hear each of your answers individually. But
wait, I have a question
really
too.
Well, let me ask this before I forget it.
All right, strength and honor.
Strength and honor. This is teamwork. It makes the dream work.
That's right.
Brian, what does it look like? What are the characteristics that a man of the home should be emulating as a good leader and a good husband?
That's my question.
Yeah, I think we need the men in the body of Christ baptized in the spirit of a man again. Mm-hmm. Right? A man is first and foremost, he's a provider, right? He tends and keeps the garden. He makes the earth bring forth fruit. He's a protector. Right? You protect your wife, you protect your children, you create a safe space and a space of provision where things can flourish in it. So I think about it just like a garden. I think what a man does is he's a gardener. What's a garden do? A gardener do? And think about this, Jesus, the only occupation Jesus was ever confused for was a gardener. In the resurrection, when he's resurrected, they think he's a gardener.
Yeah.
Right? Are you the gardener? No, he's the son of God.
Right.
But he is a gardener.
Yeah.
Because he plants a garden east in Eden. Mm-hmm. Right? So what does a gardener do?
And he always used plant metaphors for teaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's all there in the Bible. Yeah. Books, right? Jesus talks about the vine. He talks mm-hmm. about wheat and tares. It's all this stuff. He is a gardener. God, more than he poofs things, he plants things. Right? We want things poofed. God plants things. You want a good marriage, you got to plant. You got to tend. Got to water it. So I think a gardener or a man or a father, he plants seeds. How do you get a son? How do you get a daughter? You sow a seed, mm-hmm. right? And then it's not enough to just sow that seed, right? Because there's a lot of idiots sowing seeds, but they're not raising children. Mm-hmm. You sow a seed, then you got to water that seed, tend that seed, then you have to kill the snakes. When did Adam mess this world up? He didn't kill the snake, right? He entertained the snake he should have been killing. So I think as a man, you plant that seed, you take care of that seed, and then you kill the threats that come against your family and your marriage. That's good. And then you win.
That's so good.
And then, Jesse, what, in your opinion, is the woman's role in its fullness in the Proverbs 31? You know, I read that over Rebecca on Shabbat. And, yeah. You know, it's one of those things where it's so deep and there's so much to it.
Yeah.
But practically speaking, day and age, what is the woman's role?
I think to encourage women that the Proverbs 31, you know, it's over a lifetime span. I don't think that everything is, you know, in you all at one time necessarily. You know, these mm-hmm. things that we strive for, they don't always strike on the same day, you know, because it's all there in a list. We kind of feel this overwhelming burden to have it all present all the time. And I think the women are really, they critique themselves constantly trying to fix it. The more social media invades our space, moms and wives are overwhelmed by an anxiety to fulfill what the world sees that they need to be.
Yeah.
So when I look at it, I say, God, you had me marry Brian. I didn't marry John Smith from down the street. I didn't marry Larry from across the street. Those are not my husbands. You had me marry Brian. And if you'll give me the wisdom and the help from heaven to be the best wife to Brian that I can be, that means that I have to learn my team. And we have to have a team culture, and we talk about this in the book. It sounded like you had read the mm-hmm. book when you said the teamwork, because we talk about building a family culture that is your family culture, not your parents' family culture, not his parents' family culture. I am not required to answer to God one day for how she was your wife. I will be required to answer to the Lord for how I am his wife. And that means finding out what Brian needs from me that maybe does not match up with what my father needed from my mother or what his father needed from his mother, and yet still scripturally based. Obviously, we want to be those things. Be a woman of God. Be a woman of prayer. Be a hard worker. I think sometimes women think they either have to work outside the home or they have to be a stay-at-home mom. Well, Proverbs 31 woman was all of those things wrapped up into one. Mm-hmm. In different seasons, she was doing different things in different times of the day. She was up before the sun came up. She stayed up and took care of her family. She, all of these things, you know, and so we want to judge ourselves by the world's standard. And I really believe that it's time for women to come back into like, I am anti-feminism. And people think that is insane mm-hmm. because they look at me and they go, you're an independent woman that your husband lets you do anything that you want to do. I preach all over the world. I go into, you know, the darkest and underground church worlds, and he sends me, and I go not by myself with a team, but it's not like he has to be there. I've gone all over the world and done whatever I wanted to do, been in dangerous places, preached the gospel all over the earth, raised my kids, done all of this with his backing because he is confident in who he is. He's never said to me, Jesse, I don't think, you know, you don't need to do that. He's always just released me to do whatever was in my heart. And yet I feel more than ever that the feminist movement took something from us. I mean, it really, totally. It aborted the dream of God in women's hearts and told them, you can burn your bra. Well, what if I don't want to burn my bra? What if I want to be all that God's called me to be, not what you want me to be? Mm-hmm. And these, and especially women have been hard on women, saying, you have to believe this, you have to be this, you have to come to this. And it's like, no, I don't want any of those things. That generation that came before me, I want to be different than that. I want my children to remember how I cook. I want them to remember how I smell. I want them to be with me. I want to have kids. I want to be a wife to him. I want when he dies, when I die, I don't know who will outlive each other, but when Brian—
I think you'll be me.
You think so?
Yeah, I'm pretty
okay,
sure.
We're going to go with that.
Look at me. I look like Santa Claus. Look at you. I think you're going longer than me.
Oh, my. I hope we just die at the same time, like the notebook.
Yeah, like the notebook.
Yeah,
each other's
I
arms.
Just, like,
it's every couple's dream, right?
Instantaneous, absolutely. I'm like, I don't know
and
how
it's just
you
quiet, peacefully
peaceful, in your sleep.
Yeah.
Yes,
with swans flying over you.
Nicholas Sparks.
100%.
All the dreams. Yeah. Yeah. So whatever we die, if Brian, you know, if I died before him, I would just want him to say, like, she was a good wife to me. Mm-hmm. Not a perfect woman. Not, like, that would be the dream of my heart, is that I was a good mom to my kids and a good wife to him. And I realized when we were first early married, I would be doing all these things, really working hard and like super frustrated and like getting bitterness in my heart towards Brian. And he would just like go to the golf course and like didn't even care. It was like our only day off. We're planning a church. I'm working 80 hours, 90 hours a week, and I'm just dying over here. And this dude just walks out to the golf course like nothing's happening. I'm like, we still have to clean the whole house. Like in my house, everybody cleaned the house on Saturday. We stayed there, got it done. Like, that was our world. In Brian's house, they had a lady that came in and did all of that while his mother worked in an office. So, in their office, taking care of all the books of their cattle brokerage.
Mom
so,
ran finances. All of us worked around
the clock. She was a businesswoman. Like,
so
he
nothing
never,
was done in the
he
house.
He never thought about that.
You know?
So, you're hitting on a really important topic really is when important. You get, we've actually had this conversation. When you are raised two different ways
two
and then you
dress.
Get married, that is a hard thing to navigate.
I was so angry with him for so long. And then he looks at me one day and he's like, what are you doing today? I'm like, what do you think I'm doing today? I'm cleaning the house. He's like, why are you doing that? Do you like that? I'm like, do I like cleaning the house? I was blown away.
No.
He literally thought it was like the joy of my life. And he was just going to do the joy of
his
life.
She loves going to golf.
Because some people do like that.
Yes, it's not.
Here's some extra ones. You know.
Yeah.
Bring her joy.
She's loving it.
Here's my laundry. So I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm miserable. You're going out to have fun. And he's like, oh, hon, you don't have to do that. He's like, we could skip going out to eat one time this week, and we could have someone come in and do that for you.
Aww.
And I was like, really? I'd never heard of such a thing. Like, to me, that was just a concept that wasn't, like, part of my world. And so whenever he said that, I was like, well, let's do that then. You mean I can go shopping or do something fun, you know? And he said, yeah, you can do whatever you want. Take a nap. I don't care what you do. So we came to that agreement, and that was my first realization of, like, wait a second. Just because it was good for my mom and dad or his mom and dad does not mean that it's good for us. And that's a very simple, basic concept.
That's
but
so good.
I don't
profound.
Think people take the time to talk
Correct.
About
yeah.
it, you know? And it, that brought so much joy. It squelched bitterness in me.
Mm.
The communication of that subject alone brought so much peace to our house. And I think it changed. So at that point, I started thinking, I just need to be his wife. I don't need to be my friend Sally's husband's wife.
Yeah, you don't have to be like her.
No.
Yeah.
I just have to be Jesse. And as long as he and I are happy with each other and we've communicated and we're on par, then the world is good.
Yeah, that's just, the Bible would say it like this, leaving and cleaving, mm-hmm. right? You're going to leave your mother, father, cleaving to your wife, and the two shall become one flesh.
Mm-hmm.
So like, we got married. I remember her family, my family was like not we didn't communicate at all, right? My mother would serve as the Holy Spirit for my father. My father would want something done, tell my mother in private, and then my mother would come tell you what my father wanted done. Your dad wants this or that, right? We didn't communicate. Jesse's family had like family meetings. Where we're going to have a family meeting, they came and called. Typically, it was to straighten you out. And so when we got engaged,
it wasn't so pleasant.
It wouldn't be pleasant. It's like everybody called.
That was just like a weekly check-in.
She was so excited.
I was like, "What's this?"
No, wouldn't you love a weekly check-in? That would be so sweet.
She would love a weekly check-in.
I was kind of like, "Was that bad to the list?"
Of course you were. Yeah.
This was like a weekly. I don't know. Straighten.
Straighten up.
Yeah. Straighten to the court.
When we were engaged,
not weekly. Don't dramatize.
No, it would be like monthly.
Yeah.
So when we got engaged, I had to play the game to get the girl. Right? I'm not dumb. So they call a family meeting. I'm engaged, so now I got to come. And I would sit there, and I'd be nice, and some of the stuff would be good, and some of the stuff I'm like, this is insane, you know? I'm just thinking, because I'm going to have a different family.
Well, everybody's family has bad stuff, you know?
Yeah,
and nobody's family is perfect.
Ugly. Nobody's perfect. So I remember we got married, and something happened, and they called a family meeting. We're newly married. You know, newly married guys can start trying to draw lines in the sand, and you got to do it, but you can do it the wrong way or the right way. Right?
Mm-hmm.
This is our family now. So they called the family meeting. I'm
you
like,
totally did it the wrong way.
I did it the wrong way. But this is the concept. I'm like, family meeting? What family? And they're like, we're having a family meeting. I'm like, no, you don't understand. We're married now. This is my family. Right? Mm-hmm. We're still an extension. We honor and respect you, but it's not going to be like that. And it was just a
Which
bit.
It's true and biblical.
It's true and biblical. And at that point, our family culture was a little unhealthy.
Yeah.
Right? It was unhealthy. And we were learning we got to not do it my family's way, her family's way. You got to do it our way, right? Like the old song. So there's a power in that. Finding who you are, and that puts you on the same team. And then when you get on the same team, instead of us against each other, it's us against whatever the world's throwing at us. And then we can win.
He asked, like, what as a woman in the house, like, what I think women, and I that is what I meant by that, was just like, if he's happy, then I'm being a good, you know what I mean? If he's happy with me, then I'm being a good wife. Like I,
it's a helpmate.
And if and we're
it makes
a team.
It really simple. I actually like that. You're simplifying it.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't have to worry about everything in the whole world. I just have to worry about our world. And then, you know, at that point, we can work on other things. But I think it matters that we love each other, because it does remind you, like, if I'm only trying to make, the only person I'm trying to please in marriage is Brian and Jesus. Mm-hmm. And if that's it, then I only have to worry about him. And that makes us a team. And then when we go off and have dinner together, we're playing now. We're escaping from the kids. This is our fun time. We're now friends. And, like, that makes better lovers. That makes better, you know, partners. That makes better parents. And our kids reap the consequences of that joy in our marriage. We're like, now if we start fussing with each other, which we're both very direct, and like, I'll tell him, like, I don't like that, and he's like,
nobody's
me either.
Taking any mess.
No, I mean, we're
family.
Very like,
nobody's putting up with it,
over the top. And our kids are like, ooh, mom and dad need to go on a date, you know.
Oh,
and they're teenagers now, but they're like, please, you guys go to dinner. Like, they don't need a babysitter anymore, you know. And we can go anytime we want, but they're cute because they understand that, like, this makes the whole family healthy. But if you don't know that you're just pleasing them and you're trying to please the whole world, you're a miserable soul. And I think women are miserable all over America.
Oh, totally. I felt like that was such a good thing to say, because on social media, there is so much talk about what a mom should be, what a mother should be. And it's just, it stresses you out.
Yes.
Or it instills fear, and it doesn't produce anything.
I'm not even on social media, so I don't know what they're saying.
Oh my gosh, there's a whole movement like called the trad wife movement, where it's like she needs to make everything from scratch and she needs to never wear pants. It's like crazy. And
No pressure.
You know, and then you need to homeschool your children. And it's not that those things are bad. It's just saying that it's like, I think there's such wisdom. And God actually kind of showed me, Jonathan laughed. God actually showed me when I had Asher, because there's also so much advice about parenting.
Oh,
he said, you're going to have to, because they'll say, well, you shouldn't, you know, you need to be a stay-at-home mom, or you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to put them in this type of school, and you need to discipline them this way. And I remember the conviction that God gave me when he was first born is, you have to look to me for how your family, the path that you guys are. This was exactly what y'all are saying. He's like, there is a plan and a purpose for your family, and it's walking a certain path, and it's not going to look like everyone else. Yeah. And so you have to look to me for how things should be in your home, not to other people.
Well, we're supposed to be people of faith. And all of those things, all they do is bring fear.
Like, that's how I feel.
From the time that you're birthing a child, they're saying to you, you should be afraid of this. Don't do this. You're going to hurt your baby. You know, all these things.
Yes, it's so frustrating.
And I would tell Brian, like,
sleep them this way, sleep them that way.
Yes.
Don't up them
and
this
everyone
way.
Everyone has a different opinion.
It changes every 7 years.
Now, our kids shouldn't be alive.
Yeah.
By y'all standards today, right? We did it all wrong.
Yeah.
We just decided, like, until we're both in faith, like, if either one of us is in fear or in a tizzy, we're not making that decision right now.
Right?
We're not doing
that's
it
That's what they
now.
Do to you in the hospitals with the vaccines. Like, oh, you don't want to do them? You got to do them, or they're going to die of
you
this.
You want your kid to have whooping cough?
Right.
Exactly.
Do you want chicken pox? And you're like, what?
Yeah.
Polio?
Cervical cancer?
Right.
Hepatitis?
Hepatitis?
Like, I don't think the child's going to be a needle junkie and a prostitute.
Yeah.
One day old.
At least not yet.
All right, Doc.
Yeah. All the fear. It's contrary to faith, and we're called to parent in faith. We're called to be married in faith. We're called to love each other. Like, all the stuff that you're like, if we do this, and the more that your family is broken, the more that fear moves. Like, my parents didn't get a divorce till I was 30.
No.
So at 30, I had never experienced, like, family fear.
Did you know when you were growing up that they were had a troubled marriage? Or
were you anticipating it?
So I think I knew that they weren't fans of each other, and I just thought they would be that way forever. You know, like, I just thought
kind of grumpy
the way they are.
Yeah.
But
basically, all the kids are grown and gone.
Because
if you're 30, then they're just like, all right, well, we don't.
Yeah.
They got it through for the kids.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate.
Hats off for that.
Yeah.
They were keeping the kids together.
But
they were like, all right, we're done being
together. We're done with this.
Yeah. And when that happened, tons of fear tried to move in on me, like, my marriage is going to break later on, and, like, all these panicky, because I'm kind of like a high-strung person anyway, and I was just, and then I was like, wait a second. Like, I need to calm down and remember who I'm married to and what's going on here. But everything, that's the enemy's try, right? To just get in, to just sneak
just
in with fear.
Just tell them the situation when your folks got divorced. What all happened that week?
Well, my parents were pastors, and I love them both dearly. There was a lot of things there I won't get into that, you know, broke their marriage, and they ended up getting a divorce. And I remember my father calling me and letting me know, and me thinking, this is a disaster. Like, I don't, what in the world? I was 30. We had planted a church 7 years before. I'd lived away, 1,000 miles away forever. I was pregnant with my third child, and I was devastated. And I remember getting down in the floor, and Brian came, I was crying, like, because you act like a child whenever your parents get a divorce, even if you're an adult. Just like that's the way it strikes
you. And you're grieving because it's a loss.
Yes, it's like a death. And Brian comes in and he's like, hey, I love you. You can grieve when the baby comes, not now.
This is marriage and life. She's like down on the floor, like, I'm like, do I need to call, like, do I call an ambulance? What all? Yeah. I mean, we're at this level. I'm like, what can I do for you?
He's like, I love you, babe, but you got to get up. You're a mom now, not just a daughter, and you're going to keep it together till that baby is out, because we had miscarried a baby before, and he's like, you're not going to let this take over your body. The baby's going to come out healthy. We're going to have a healthy child. Get up. And I want you to go on with your, and when this baby comes, then you can mourn like that if that's what you want to do, but not right now. And so we go, and then the next thing that happens that same week is that Brian's family, who's been the largest cattle brokerage in the entire world, they had sold out whenever Brian's dad died a couple years before, and the uncle who owned it.
My mom sold her portion.
Yes, she had sold her portion. And the uncle that had gotten that portion and owned the whole company had cooked the books. It ends up in a magazine.
After the 08 crash.
He tried to fix it, and they
cooked
got
the books. So front page news everywhere where I lived and pastured. They called my family the Lehman Brothers of livestock. It was like Forbes.
Forbes.
You know, like Forbes articles and stuff like that
such
about
a big
my family.
Business.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It hit every major news outlet in America. So same week,
My
family goes down. My uncle's going to prison. Jesse's folks are getting divorced.
It was so
churches
public.
Churches are all busted up. I remember we're laying in bed. We're holding hands. We're getting ready to have our third baby. I'm like, hey, Jesse, you remember when we used to be somebody? I'm like, that's all over now. And I just, we laughed.
We just laughed out loud. It's like, there's nothing that you could do.
That's a good marriage right there.
That
wars,
is great.
Yeah. Right? And you get through wars like that because you've become a team. Oh. And you got something to hold on to. Mm-hmm. So now.
And you didn't hold it to, like, you didn't let your identity be wrapped up in how people perceived you, because that would have crushed some people.
Well, both of our family names were Mud that week.
Wow.
And they had been very good names. I mean, we had identity that lied in that, but because we had created another identity, I think that God was able to rescue us from that. Grief. It was grief. I mean, it was a deep grief. But we were actually able, I think, to respond well and help even some of our family come out of that on top emotionally. By the grace of God, it didn't take any of us out. So I remember that day because I thought, man, what would happen if we didn't have a team, Team Gibson? Like, what if Team Gibson didn't exist? Because we'll tell our kids, like, hey, you can be on Team Gibson or you can be on your own team, but we win every time. And if you go on the other team, you're going to be a loser. So
I like that. I say that to our kids.
And I'll say, you can disobey. You can get out of line with what we're doing. Because they're still in our house, you know. We're supposed to lead them.
At this point, we're in charge.
Yeah, at this point, we're in charge.
At this point.
And I say, you know, you do whatever you want, but Team Gibson wins. And if you want to be on the winning team, you'll come over here. And so from the time they were born, that's what we would say to them, you
I
know.
Love it.
And it instills in them, we are winning. Winners. We always win. We always come out on top. We're always victorious no matter what we walk through. And that gives them good identity. But also, what would have happened in that season if we hadn't built that? It doesn't feel like you need to build it until you have kids, but you really need to be building it from the moment that you say, I do.
That's so good. I did have a question about when you, because you were like, we didn't handle it correctly with her family when you were kind of trying to leave and cleave. How do you...
Wait, before you ask that question of how you do, how did they respond to that?
Not well.
Not
what did they
well.
Say?
Yeah, they were torqued. But
who? Wait, what?
My parents. Yeah. Called the family meeting, and then he was like, we are
family.
But I wanted to hear how they responded.
I was trying
they
to...
They handled it as nicely as they could.
Did you end up attending the meeting?
They didn't like
meeting?
It.
Where are
no,
you in the birth order?
I stood my ground.
So, was anyone else married in the family, or were you all the first?
No, my oldest sister was married.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
There were some real power struggles with one individual, and really controlled, like,
The whole thing.
The whole thing.
The whole family system. Yeah. And I was from a family that was even messed up. Like, you know, we're party animals and you know what I mean? But everybody respected each other's decision-making process and your humanity, right? With this system, it was get in line or...
Or buck off.
You're out of the will of God. Yeah. You know, it's terrible. And I knew it wasn't right. Right? And I wasn't going to subject my family to that kind of, like, domination. So I made some drastic
It wasn't like
measures.
A healthy, pleasant, you know, hey, we need to talk about something.
If it would have been like that, I would have just rolled with it. But if it's like, you're going to do what I say, when I say it, how I say it. And it's like, no, I'm a grown man with my own family now.
In
like,
his defense, I think he did the best with the cards he that he had.
Yeah.
And I appreciated it because it took some pressure off of me.
As good as a 22-year-old.
I think as good as a 22-year-old male could do.
Yeah, I was 22.
I think he did an incredible job leading our family. My parents probably wished he could have been a little bit more gentle. It's not really his forte. He's never been super gentle, you know? So
I'm a teddy bear. I think he's
very gentle.
He's
kind
and very tender, but like, he is like, his voice is kind of gruff, you know, all the things. And they had only raised girls. So for my family, it was just a bizarre encounter, you know? And so I don't, on either side, I don't think either one was prepared to handle the other one. Mm-hmm. But he did, I think if he had not have done that, even if it was a little bit wrong, I think young men need to know, like I see, we've pastored long enough now that we see young men and they'll be like, no one can come to the hospital. No one can see our baby. No, I'm like, bro, you're going to want those people in like 2 months when you want to go on a date.
Yeah, you're going to want them pulling for your baby. You know? Yeah.
Right. So with the same amount of respect they're showing, I think it should be met with respect. But at some point, if there's a broken family system and you have a lot of, you know, trauma and mental health issues going on and family that doesn't understand boundaries and they won't respect those things, there is a point where you have to come in and say, hey, we're going to have to do things for our family that God's calling us to do. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that scripturally at all.
You know, we minister in places where the cost of living is so high. Let's take Hawaii, for example. I preach a lot on Hawaii. It's terrible, but somebody's got to save those Polynesians.
Someone's got to sacrifice.
Here I am. There are people there.
There are people.
God loves them.
Call. Come over and help us. Yeah. I will go, Lord.
You're like, I will go, Lord.
Yeah. Send me.
I know the
God's
wait.
God's calling me to the Ritz on Hawaii. Yeah. Right now. No, but I've been preaching there forever. One of my mentors is there. But the cost of living is so high in Hawaii now because, you know, everybody's in. The Americans with money want to buy stuff there. The Japanese with money buy stuff there. You know, you got Chinese people are from everywhere with big money. So the locals end up living multiple generations in a house.
To afford the house.
On levels, right? So you have all these different generations, all these different perspectives. And a lot of times grandmother and aunt and uncle and mom and dad, everybody's cramming their values on that kid, those kids that just got married, looking at them through a microscope. And it's a very tough system for these kids to thrive in and to become their own thing. Now, they have a cultural respect generationally. Maybe we've lost and we could learn something from them. But I think the housing situation creates a tougher place about leaving and cleaving.
Yeah.
We've done a ton of marriage conferences on Hawaii. And when you bring this up, you can feel like the generational control thing starts swirling, right? Grandparents don't like it. Parents don't like it. Aunt and uncle don't like it. And it's interesting how systems like this are different, and it depends on what culture you're in.
That actually leads to a really good question, which is, what would your advice be to someone who is having to deal with someone who is trying to insert themselves into the marriage and trying to control the family, like your like nuclear family, not just the family as a whole?
I have very, very deep-seated views on this subject. I walked through a year of studying honor for parents, grandparents, you know, those elders in our family, as opposed to obedience, which is what children do when they're under the care and the, you know, the umbrella protection of their father's house. What happens as you age and what honor should look like in light of the scripture. It was important to me because I was having a difficulty with a family member that did not understand boundaries. So boundaries were like non-existent. There was none. And every time that it was brought up, it was, I'm in spiritual authority. I'm in familial authority. I'm in, you know, it just kept coming up and up and up. And it was very difficult because there was no pleasing this person outside of complete and utter obedience. Mm. And so it wasn't like, oh, we can compromise and I can have my view and you can have yours and I can honor it and we can just get along. It was just a constant state of, you have to do it exactly like I want it done. And then to the point of abuse in those situations. And I had been raised very strict on obedience and honor. So as I came into like theology school in college, I'm like, God, you have to give me some revelation on this. And as I studied it, and you go back into the ancient Near East and the families and how they would have honored. I mean, we don't even know what honor is. These people were, this was a whole nother level.
Different world.
But I did realize through that study that God had given us honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live a long time on the earth. Well, I want to live a long time. I'm sure you guys want to live a long time. So this honor thing kept coming up. And as I studied it, I looked and I began to see God really give me a revelation that honor was put there from children to their parents as a principle from God so that the gospel of Jesus Christ would be passed down from generation to generation. Let one generation declare to the next generation the wonderful works of the Lord. And God wanted to ensure that the children had an open heart to hear the voice of their parents because they were passing down generational faith. That was the purpose. It wasn't so that one adult can be in charge of all other adults. It wasn't there so that someone could abuse someone. The purpose of honor was there so that God could get his gospel, his good news story, through one generation and pass it to the next generations, and that it would become a multi-generational faith that was held true in to your heart, like very important to you. And God began to really share with me and teach me about the power of honor as I share the gospel, that every time I get up and I preach the gospel in a service, I'm honoring my father and mother. Aww. Every time I raise my kids in the ways of God, I am honoring my father and mother. Every time that I live for Jesus out loud on the street, I'm honoring my father and mother. Every time my marriage works, I'm honoring my father and mother, because what we're doing through marriage is showing that the covenant still works, that God's covenant is powerful. We are a picture on the earth of the bride of Christ and how the bridegroom loves that bride. So every time that this is working, I'm preaching the gospel through my life. And for me, that was such a salve to my soul, because the deepest desire of my heart was to honor my mother and father, and yet I knew I could not obey what they were asking me. Mm. And I found myself in this like weird tension.
You were like in a tension.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when God gave me that revelation, it just helped me. And that's what I would share with people that are dealing with it. Are you able to obey God and that person? And if you are not, then you need to understand the purpose of honor and you need to live your life as a person of honor. And that will bring honor to your mother and father. Whether they see it as honor, that's up to them. But what we do with our life, we answer to an audience of one. And, yeah, and God knows our heart and where it is. And I just had to find myself there.
And some of these examples are extreme. We're talking about dealing with an extreme situation.
Oh, yeah.
Right, an eroding marriage at the time. Big problems. So a person in a normal transition to a marriage is dealing with a different system. A lot of times I think we broad sweep things, like let's say telling people, well, you just got to forgive, whatever situation it is, right? I think we've held victims hostage in the body of Christ by just saying, just forgive. Mm-hmm. Like think about the girl that was brutalized, raped, you know, treated terrible by some jerk face. And that girl just has to forgive and go on, and we wipe it away like that with a simple, Jesus forgave, now you forgive. Sometimes if we're not careful with that messed up situation, I think we're victimizing the victim. So in Christian theology, a lot of us just have two, let's say, castes or classes of people, saved and wicked. Right? Lost, saved wicked, saved whatever. Jewish theology is different. There were the saved, there were the, well, we'll see about it. Maybe they'll be born again. They're lost, or maybe they'll be found. And then there was the wicked. Mm. And you watch, the Bible talks about dealing with the wicked different than you deal with just somebody that doesn't know God. There's a difference. Mm-hmm. The wicked person is dangerous. The wicked person is playing just for themselves, right? That there's a way you deal with that situation different than a normal lifestyle. What's interesting is 1 in 25 people, they say, is a card-carrying sociopath. Mm. What does that mean by sociopath? That means they could shoot us in the head, walk out and go supersize their fries, you know, at McDonald's, drive
That's
home,
crazy,
sit
right?
down and act like nothing happened.
I feel like it's more rampant actually now.
It's getting worse.
Yeah, there's more sociopaths,
so
narcissists.
We're pastoring people through some of this craziness now.
Yeah.
And it's always been there. It's probably on the top. So I'm real careful because some people are dealing with something so strange and so manipulative that normal people aren't. You almost got to solidify. You know, because some people may have a pretty good mom and dad and they're disagreeing, yeah. they're getting married.
They're a little
they're
opinionated.
Finding their stuff out. It's like, you're not going to control me, you Jezebel.
Yeah,
like,
you're like,
calm down.
Yeah,
your spirit-filled mom
Sally
and dad disagree
not a
with
Jezebel.
You, but they're not trying to dominate your life. You
Too
know?
Many
you,
people
you,
use that word.
You got to qualify what the situation really is. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're talking to younger marrieds. So some guy doesn't get gung-ho and... You know what I mean? Go tearing down Jezebel's stronghold
when
it's really just...
You're passionate when you're young, but kind of silly. Not
just
no wisdom.
Yeah. It's got to make sense.
What are some things that you guys use in marriage, times or ways to communicate when, if you want to see something different in your partner, how do you communicate those things and how do you do it in a way that's loving or safe environment so you're not triggering the person into thinking like, oh, I'm not doing enough, or?
I think neither one of us suffer in silence, right? If we feel it, we say it. We're communicators, we're preachers. But now we've been developing a culture where we can be pretty honest with each other for a lot of years, 25 years in now. So early on—
Even our staff, they laugh. They'll be like, they'll be around us and we're very like honest. Like to us, it's no big deal. It's just honest, you know? Like we're just, I'll be like, hey, I don't like that. And he's like, well, I do. I'm like, well, I mean, you can do
we're
whatever
in front
you
of
want.
Law. I'm like, I disagree.
I'm just letting you know. Like, you know?
I
disagree.
That, though. And I'd rather people be honest than not.
Me too. I'd rather them talk to me than about me. I'd just rather have that. But some people aren't comfortable with that, so we do have to temper it sometimes because they'll say, Mom and Dad are fighting.
Our campus pastor say, Mom and Dad are fighting. Mom and Dad are fighting. You know?
And they'll laugh.
So no, we're not fighting. We
they
just
know. They've been with
like
us for 15 years, and we've never had a blow up. You know, like they know it's going to be fine. But it took a lot of years for people because— I was a youth pastor when we first got married and he ran a Bible school. And early on in our marriage, we were still really young, but we already had this practice of like being very honest with each other. And it doesn't bother us. We're both a personality where that some people that would be much harder, you know, they don't have the spirit to take that kind of a, like that kind of direct communication. It's too hurtful. And they don't like things in public. And you know, you have to know your spouse. I think early on we would have these discussions and then teenagers in our youth group would just be watching, you know, like, and then they were like, what's going to happen? Because every time that had happened in their house,
it had
been followed by a huge fight, violence, leaving, it didn't go well.
Divorce.
And then they would watch us be like, okay. And then we would like get out at the McDonald's and like hug each other and like go on about our business. And they said it was the only reason that they got married. That watching
you showed them
us,
how to fight correctly.
Yeah, because
or
we
disagree correctly.
Disagree. Yeah. We weren't even
conflict
fighting.
Resolution,
but
right?
some people think if you're having a conflict
That's
that you
problem.
Hate each other. Mm-hmm. But for us, it's just we're just deciding where what we're going to do with a disagreement. And there's not going to be any abuse. It's not going to be violent. It's not going to be any of that. So we can have it in front of people because, not like in a way that would make people uncomfortable. But if you find most kids right now, they've grown up in a single parent home. Most of them haven't grown up with their original mother and father. So all of that's very uncomfortable for them, even if it's the most gentle conversation. So watching that be resolved, I think a lot of times people are like, never fight in front of your kids. Mm-mm. And I disagree. I think that sometimes you have to have a disagreement in front of your kids so that they can also see a resolution.
That's what we try and do.
Yeah, I think it's important.
If we sin
against each other in front of, like, we have a rule at our house, like you apologize as loud as you offended. So if we're going to, if we offended each other in front of everybody, then we have to apologize in front of everybody. There's no like whispering like, hey, sorry about that. Like, no, you just confronted me in front of 5 people.
We do a lot of public repentance.
We do.
It's like, Dad,
so do we.
Sorry.
So do we.
I shouldn't have said that. I'm not perfect. I repent. Please forgive me.
It's funny when I repent to my 3-year-old, you know. It's like,
it's hilarious.
Yeah. I forgive you,
he's
Dad.
He's like, your sins are remitted, Dad.
Yeah,
right,
he's there.
You
know?
Yeah, that's right. She throws holy water on
exactly.
you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. His diaper. More like
there's something good about that. Kids know that you can be you can mess up, be restored. You don't have to hide. Just repent.
Oh, I have a good question about kids. Discipline. So we talked a little bit about this a second ago, all these different versions of it.
So hard. I'm always like, am I doing the right thing?
Well, I think that kids are wired in different ways, and so sometimes that requires different forms of discipline. But we are called to raise our children up in the way they should go, and they don't always know. Like, my 3-year-old doesn't know he shouldn't hit the 1-year-old in the head, right? Like, he thinks, like, this is cool. She's smaller than me. So
it's kind of like, what if I do this, what would happen?
Yeah, she can't catch me.
It's not malicious. It's just curiosity.
Cause and effect or a new concept.
What did you guys do growing, or what? How did you guys, not how were you disciplined, well, whatever that was, but how did you guys discipline as a unit? What was your, great successes in that and great failures, if there are any?
I'm the law, Brian's grace.
This is true.
He's the fun one.
I'm more fun. Jesse's more the hammer and the law. I see things through a different lens. Like, sometimes I'll tell Jesse, you know, she was raised real strict. So I'll be like, listen, God's not nearly as mad at you about everything as you think he is. And she'll answer back, well, he's not as happy with you about everything you think he is, right?
I'm like, not nearly as happy as you think he is.
Like, Jesus loves me. But I think we learn pretty young to be a united front with our kids.
That's so good.
So we come into agreement. So there's no telling mom and then working dad. Mm-hmm. Like, we're a front. We're the team. We're together till we die. It's my covenant partner. You know, don't start any stuff with either one of us and play us against us. That's a no-no. I think you got to be consistent. I think it's got to be loving. I think we have to take authority over our kids, right? God chose Abraham because he would command his children. The Bible says that's why the father of faith is the father of faith. He would take authority. And sometimes I see a grown 35-year-old man that won't take authority over a 3-year-old. Mm. And I'm like, okay, come on, come on.
I gave you $1,000 if I could find a 35-year-old mom that could take control of a 3-year-old. I mean, it's like, you're in public. There's nobody taking authority over their area of dominion anymore.
Ask my question. Don't you think that there's an authority that the husband carries more than the wife, where it's better if the husband...
Yeah, there's a time for it. There's a time for a man to take authority over the environment.
When your boys are 15 and 16 years old, your voice is going to be every... Because, I mean, there's nothing that gets a 15-year-old boy to stop in his tracks except for that.
At 13, young males start trying mom.
Yeah.
13, 14? Mm-hmm. They start trying mom.
That's weird to think
about. Because they got to put, you know, what they're developing into a man. They don't want to be a little kid anymore. Mm-hmm. The test starts flowing. Life starts changing.
She's the thing in the way of them being a man. Mm-hmm.
That's right, because she's protecting, she's holding them back, she wants to keep them safe. And
they don't
wanna
be safe.
Dad's job is to, okay, this kid's got to learn to wreck and not kill himself, right, whatever he's driving, because boys are going to be rough and tumble. But then they got to have dad to stop from challenging mom, because dad protects the environment he provides. So I think Jesse and I did a good job. Not perfect job.
No.
I mean, I've said a million things I wish I wouldn't have said as a parent.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Right? I mean, I'm not one of these guys that I was the perfect parent. I'm no James Dobson. who went on to be with the Lord.
Bless him.
I was on his show once, which was incredible. One great. James Dobson prophesied to me accurately.
Wow.
On his show one time.
Yes, he did.
And my attorney sent it to me last week when Dobson died. Like, do you remember Dobson saying that? And I'm like, holy moly. That's one of the most accurate things I've ever heard.
It's beautiful.
So, Dobson.
I just want to point out, though, he is one of my heroes of the faith. And then I found out he only had 2 kids. I'm like, everything just
Dobson
went out the window.
Dobson should have 20. What's up? He should have 20.
I'm like, I have 3. What am I going to do with a man that only had 2? We teased about it for years. Of course, he was awesome. But and his kids are great. But
but 2 is easy. So.
Two is like another world to, you know, whenever you pass that number.
Yeah. I think you guys are heading the right direction because you're talking about it, you're thinking about it. You know,
you're
cognizant
thinking
of
about it.
And your kids are little. You're learning your parenting style.
We're thinking a lot.
Right? You have to write.
Thinking,
now.
Discussing, acting.
And we communicate about, we're really good about communicating with one another, and we always end up on the same page. Of course, the husband gets the final say. That is accurate, right?
Yeah.
Let's just put this out there, because I think a lot of women in today's age, they want to have the final say, but really the husband has the final fight. He listens to the wife, but the wife can't run the roost.
Well, somebody has to pull the trigger. No matter what team.
You're the trigger puller.
No matter what team you're on, there's got to be a quarterback. He's got to call the plays. Mm-hmm. I mean, there has to be, everybody has to know their position, and we all have to want to win more than we want ourselves to get what we want, like to get to do whatever we want to do. And I've had to learn that, because I was in a female-dominated house, and Brian was in a male-dominated house.
Y'all really were raised opposite.
Complete opposite. So, but for me, there's a joy in like, oh my gosh, you mean that he pulls the trigger, and then when we stand before the Lord, he asks him. We're going to do
it. We have it easier.
Yeah. And
low key.
I might even disagree with him when we're in our room, but when we come out, we go out in front of our kids, we're in one accord. I'm back in his play.
That's helpful.
And then if it wins, I go, wow, we won. And if it loses, I go, me and Dad didn't make the best decision. I never like throw him under the bus, because I think your kids need to know that this was all both of you. And you'll appreciate that.
I never
when
do
you
that.
Get,
you do that all the
listen,
time.
Listen, like, you know what my daughter told me the other day? She told me that you went in to discipline her, and that what you went in to do, you said, we're going to act like we did it, but don't tell Mom. And she's 13.
What
now.
Can I say? I'm getting softer in my older years, right? I moved almost like I'm dad
That's
meets
so
granddad.
Bad.
You know, so.
I hear that happens as you. Especially with the younger, it's not as strict.
You get lighter. Yeah, 100%.
She darts you out.
All of our children had different parents, right? With the first, we were so strict.
That is so true.
You got this kid, you don't know if you're going to screw it up or not. You're like, terrified about it.
So scary.
Then you figure out, hey, they're pretty tough.
They
survive a lot of stuff. Yeah. And by the third one, you're like, yeah, the Lord will raise you. I'll be there to graduate.
Do yourself a favor, and with your oldest one, let some things go, even if you think they're a huge deal. And with your baby, remember to get in the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think women as a whole, though, make most men better parents. Like Jesse cared, Jesse researched. I'm like, they're kids. They're like dogs or cows. They're going to grow up. They'll be fine. And she's obsessing about these things.
Yeah.
So her
obsession.
She's like, we need
to give them this. Put onions in their socks. I'm like, whatever, you do it.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's God's divine design.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To make you better. They're obsessive. It makes you better.
Big picture details.
Yeah.
And you guide, I follow. Because, I mean, he makes a lot of things easy. There's a lot of things I don't have to think about because he's leading. And so I can obsess because he's handling other stuff.
Yeah. With kids y'all's age, these were the things our pastors hammered with us. Number one was, I'm looking for a man that can take authority over a three-year-old. He would say that a lot. And make the tables uncomfortable.
What does that mean?
Because people would let kids just run roughshod. Like you're in a restaurant and there's people out spending their money to eat and some kids just going wild and nobody's tending to it.
And it's not that it's not the kids' problem.
They're little.
But it's the adults'
it's the parents' problem
because they won't get up and physically remove the child and walk them out to the sidewalk until they get calmed down and love them.
Right.
It's our job to take authority over that situation, not the child's job to emotionally regulate themselves.
It starts at that age and then it trickles into the rest of the kid's life. Second thing he was big on is, and he taught us this, Pastor Bill Shear, Guts Church, Tulsa, Oklahoma. So he would say this, like, a kid's out of line, we got this. It was, if an adult says no, right? If you say no, we'd say this to our kids 100 times back in a day. If an adult says no, what do you do? And they would say, drop it. You know, a kid will ask you and ask you and ask you and ask you and ask you. Right? Keep coming at you on the same topic. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a time your word matters. And he put that into us. If an adult says no, you drop it. There was a third thing we used back then that we learned from another pastor. He had a tribe of kids.
Yes, he did.
Right? We worked with him up above Kansas City.
6 or 7, I think.
And
now we're talking.
Yeah.
Yeah, a tribe.
We can learn from that guy.
Yeah.
He had a tribe. We were newly married.
And he was kind. You know how some people are like super dominant, like over the top, and it like their kids don't talk and they look terrified? I don't want those kids.
No,
like, that's
either.
Not who I'm.
You
don't
want to break their spirit.
No,
yeah.
I want them to have so
be a
much
contender.
Spirit.
Right.
But he would point. They'd be doing something. They knew they were doing something wrong, right? You know how you're running around climbing a wall or something you're not supposed to be doing. He'd point, and he would say, he wouldn't say a word. He'd point in his ear, And then he pointed his heart. And it meant listen and obey. And wherever that man was, he could do it. It'd get my attention after I knew what he's doing. He was a man, but it's like listen and obey. And I think there's something about parenting. We're training them to learn to listen and to obey the voice of God. Because it's not always going to be our voice. It's our voice for a short period of time. It's God's voice for the rest of
their life. I think that's why it's important. Great. People forget that that's why it's important for them to listen, not because you want them to obey. I tell my kids all the time, I'm not going to be anywhere you are in a few years, and you're going to never hear my voice except for when we see each other. But God's voice will always be there. I'm just the practice round for God. And if you can hear my voice and obey it, then you can hear God's voice and obey it. I'll tell you this story. It'll make you feel better about your parenting. My son, we were in church one night, and we're pastors, you know, so we were preaching and ministering to people in the altar. My son was 4 years old. We're in this 40-foot tall sanctuary, and one of his buddies that was there, another preacher's kid, of course, was saying to him, "Hey, wouldn't it be fun if we went and got on that curtain?" It was a huge theater curtain that went up 40 feet in the air.
Yeah.
And my son was strong. He was always in the trees climbing. We were from Kentucky. He played outside all the time. He was just tough as could be. And he goes, "Yeah." Well, they started lifting that theater curtain up because church was over. They were going to start cleaning the sanctuary, and that theater curtain started going up, and I saw my son sprinting. Well, I'm in the altar. I can't get to him, and I know he can grab hold of this thing, and he literally grabs it, and he rides it up to about 15 feet in the air.
Nice.
His little body is just hold dangling, it. And the whole church is like this, and I go, "Justice, whatever you do, do not let go." Because I'm thinking we can get a ladder, we can get to him. Like, they've stopped
the curtain.
And how
old is he?
He's 4.
Wow.
And that is terrible.
Maybe five.
And I am thinking, dear Jesus, if he drops from there, he is every bone in his body is going to crumble, you know? And so I'm standing under him, and I'm thinking, I just need to stay calm, my voice calm. You know, you're doing all the parenting things. And he looks at me, and like a little just crazy kid, he goes, and he lets go.
No!
And his body drops, and the whole, you know, sanctuary is, you know, like this. And he jumps and lands just like a cat, popped up and ran off and played with his friends. And I thought, oh, Jesus. And I'll tell you this, when our kids were super young, I would say, God, I would just be concerned about a lot of things, and I would be too anxious, and I would think about it. And then God showed me that he would assign an angel to my children, that each one of them, that they would report to the throne room of heaven for my kids if I would ask God to protect them, that he would assign protection to them. And so I would send that with them. And that day, there's nothing you can do. There are some things there's just nothing you can do. And your kids have to try. They have to push the boundaries. They have to live. And in this day and age, you know, kids used to leave and come back at dinner time when their mom yelled for them. But now we watch everything and we're involved in everything.
Yeah.
And I do think it's harmful in some ways. I think there's places where as long as our boys are doing dangerous things and our girls are doing dangerous things, that wasn't safe what he was doing. I needed the angels that day to protect him. But we have to allow our kids some freedom to live and to learn, and their bodies to learn what kind of impact it can take, and their minds, what kind of impact it can take. Because when you allow a child to get hit, to get hurt, to get into fights with their friends, to all that stuff, and you don't break it all apart, what you build in them is empathy. And that can only be learned through experience.
Wow.
And when you allow a kid to have those hits in life, you're allowing them to become an empathetic adult. And that's beautiful. That makes a good spouse. That makes a good friend. That makes a lot of things. You can't instill empathy in a kid without life experience. And a lot of people, those psychopaths that we were talking about, they don't have that level of empathy. Mm-hmm. And it's because people have guarded them from experiencing life. And we do want our kids not to be hurt, but we take it sometimes to the point where we don't let them experience the life that God's given for them.
That's great. So that's a good place to end on, unless you have any last thoughts.
No.
I mean, that was awesome. I know we were just going to talk about marriage, but I love talking about parenting, too, because it's so intertwined.
We're in the thick of it right now, you know.
Yeah.
We're just in a, you know.
I don't know if it's the thick of it. I said that to somebody the other day. I was like, we're in the thick of it with the one-year-old, three-year-old, and the five-year-old. He's like, oh, no, I have a freshman and a seventh grader and a senior in high school. I'm in the thick of it. So I think everyone thinks they're in the thick of it when
it changes.
Yeah,
it lasts a long time.
Yeah, exactly.
Where y'all are is crazy town. I think it's the crazy, in a way. but you got a little more control.
You right?
The guy with the high school, college age, he you know, it's on them a lot.
Right.
Some of it's on him, a lot of it's on them now. It's a different kind
animal.
Of faith.
Right.
But I'll say this, if I could do anything over, the only thing I really regret in my whole life is I wish I'd have had more.
Yeah.
I got three kids. You know what I mean? And now they're growing up.
It's the only thing like, we change. Even the bad stuff, it's the only thing I would change.
When you walk in now with God, spirit-empowered, trained kids, like we walk in as a family now and it's like there's a strength to it. Like we can take over. You're starting to see what your kids can run and do and produce. And it's like this is what's taking over the earth when I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
So don't let the craziness, you know what I mean,
mm-hmm.
take away what you're building.
Because
it's not going to be long, 10 years. You're in a different game.
Oh no, it's a total game changer, and it's like the joy of life.
It is.
Everything you build with your hands, there's something from it. Even church and ministry, there's something from it, but it is not like what you build with your body is game changing. Like what you produce through the fruit of your body, and
powerful.
If you get in the game and like, I think the biggest thing. Parents, they're so distracted right now, they don't physically get up and move their body to that child. So they're just constantly giving like a verbal cue.
Yeah.
But they're not, like I watch young parents, and we were tempted because we were so tired. We were like building a church and our whole body just wanted, and we made ourselves get up and we were so exhausted. And I think that's one of the reasons we didn't push to have more kids. And because we were fully engaged raising them, like we would get up and move and you know, take their body and help them and get in at their eye level and do all, you know, we were very committed to that form of parenting.
You were intentional.
Yes. And I see it now and I'm like, man, I just wish so bad that we would have had more of them, even though at the time I thought, if we have any more, I might not wake up tomorrow.
Yeah.
But they're the greatest joy. And you watch what you've trained them. You didn't even know they remembered. And then all of a sudden, they start living it. And it's in front of you. And you're like, I didn't even know they knew I said that. You know, and they're responding to other people with the same stuff and living out their life. Even when they're making big mistakes, it's still fun.
I have a friend that I was on the phone with just before this today. And they just drove up to Seattle with their kids. And I was like, so do you guys have the Sprinter van now? Because they have six. And he's like, no, we went ahead and got a school bus. And they have a school bus.
He's got the bus.
He's
huh?
got a bus, yeah.
He went all in.
He went big.
Six kids. That's not even, yeah, Sprinter van might not hold them all.
No.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much for just imparting wisdom. And, you know, what I love about y'all is that I can tell that y'all really are on the same team and you guys love being together. And I think that's just such a testament, like a couple that loves to be together, loves to do ministry together and works in unity together. That really takes time and effort. And so thank you for just taking this time to teach us about marriage and parenting. I'm going to read the book. We're going to read the book. Love Handles.
Love Handles.
And I think we can just end on that note and just say thank you so much, guys.
Thank you for having us.
What an honor.